Globally, consumer behavior has shifted so dramatically that supply chains haven't been able to adapt or keep up. Adabotics was built from the ground up to address the fulfillment needs of digital commerce globally. We are building the solutions that will drive commerce in the future.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the A3, the Robot Industry Podcast. I'd like to welcome the listeners all over the world from Apeldoorn in the Netherlands, Prague and the city of St. Peter's, and Omaha, Nebraska. Thanks for tuning in. So I am very excited to have Scott Gravel from Adabotics today. And if you have not heard about Adabotics, they're one of the most exciting automation, robot, and material handling companies specializing in inventory management systems. And they're located in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Adabotics was named one of CNBC's 100 most promising startups in 2019, a mention on Time's Best Inventions of 2019, and Fast Company's Most Innovative Company in 2020. Scott is the CTO and CEO of Adabotics, and welcome to the podcast, Scott.
Well, thanks a lot, Jim. I'm glad we've had this chance to talk.
Hey, Scott, can you tell our audience a little bit about your background and what you've been up to and how you ended up leading a robotic material handling company?
You know, it's that textbook standard path of any technology CEO. You know, a bit of time in the military, a bachelor's degree in nursing, followed by years in residential construction, including kitchen cabinet design, that ultimately led to skateboard manufacturing. So I was being very sarcastic when I said that it was his typical path. I am the most unqualified person on paper for my job. But I've been very passionate learner, and I had an idea, and that idea came from my work in actually consulting manufacturers in how to integrate digital manufacturing strategies into their workflows and into their factories. And I took this idea that I had, and I spent 2 years trying to get rid of it because it scared me. It scared me a lot. And when I couldn't get rid of it, because I couldn't find a reason not to do it, we moved forward and raised the seed capital we needed about 4.5 years ago. And we've been on an incredible journey ever since.
The Adabotics 3D storage system were inspired by ants, because I watched a little bit about you on the YouTube. Can you tell us more about kind of this interesting and humble beginning?
Yeah, I saw the problem, which was a dramatic shift in consumer behavior to e-commerce. And that was, you know, presenting massive challenges to traditional, not just supply chain kind of infrastructure and technology, but to the algorithms needed to optimize. When you move from a mixed pallet caseload distribution model to retail, you know, to bricks and mortar retail, and you go to an each item, you know, small order size, highly variable. Now, and that's what e-com is, you know, your 2.6, your 2.8 items, and they're always different. The automation technology that existed wasn't going to support that. So I started looking at the problem, and I just kind of figured out, you know, nature probably has some of this figured out. It started with a thought experiment. So I went looking at bees and, you know, and so many different kind of natural systems. And what finally was the aha moment was seeing a researcher, Dr. Walter Chinkle, who was researching leafcutter ants in the jungle. And he was casting their colonies and then excavating them. And I saw when, with an excavated casting of the colony, that leafcutter ants access their storage chambers vertically. And they wrap these storage chambers around this kind of vertical access shaft. So in that moment, if we ever get a chance to meet face-to-face, Jim, I'll give you one of my business cards, because it's actually half the size of a normal business card. Because in that very moment, I took my business cards and I ripped them in half, and I started playing with geometry layouts on the table. And there's this massive paradigm shift that kind of happened. Because, you know, without many exceptions, really, every automated system out there was a derivative of a human scale environment. And what I mean by that is we're a two-dimensional species. We walk on the ground, we drive on the ground. So we need rows and aisles to access all of the storage So think about the grocery store, think about, you know, a Costco or a Home Depot or something like that. But also think about the pictures of warehouses. You know, it's endless pallet racking or shelving. And when you switch it now to a vertical axis in a three-dimensionally distributed matrix and not a horizontal axis in a two-dimensionally distributed matrix, everything opens up. It's a completely different way of kind of thinking about things. So the foundation of adiabatics was on a new and unique geometry. And once I had this geometry kind of sorted, then it was, okay, how do you interact with it? What's the workflow? How do you move around? How do you actually get things? And then once what I had a workflow understood on how you would access this geometry and actually present it, then I started working on trying to figure if I could actually make a machine or a robot that could actually move in this matrix to do so. And that's what we figured out in those kind of first 2 years that I was looking for reasons not to do it. And we built a proof of concept, and the first time we turned it on, it worked. So we filmed it, and actually we never turned it on ever again. We used that information to go, you know, build a business.
That's very exciting. We can't use pictures in a podcast, of course.
No.
So can you explain what your solution looks like?
Yeah, first I need to explain kind of the geometry. So everybody has a piece of graph paper, or at least knows what one looks like. If you take one square on a graph paper, there's four squares that touch its long edges. And what we did is we created that central square is the place where we access the four squares around it. So imagine stacking bins up on four sides around a vertical column. And then what we do is we nest together that kind of, you know, four-leaf clover shape or that cross shape in a very, very dense matrix by offsetting them. It's not a linear nest. It's like over two and up one. But if you take a piece of graph paper, this actually can draw pretty simply. So when you extend that up to the ceiling height of a warehouse and you've got layers of bins that four of them are around a vertical shaft, we take a robotic shuttle. It was the first one ever designed to actually move, you know, purely in three dimensions. And we actually navigate it across the top of this storage matrix. So we need about a meter of clearance between the top of the structure and the rafters. And then when we get to the vertical shaft that has the next target bin in it that we need. And in a 10 meter high warehouse, which is fairly typical, we end up with 96 bin positions wrapped around that vertical shaft. But one of them is always empty. So we have 95 of 96 bin positions. Then the robot transitions from a horizontal mode, moving in X and Y, to a vertical mode, a climbing mode. And it descends down the shaft and it takes its current payload, the bin it had on it before, and it goes and puts it away in that one empty position. It doesn't matter where that empty position is. We just go put that bin away. And then we will climb up and then pick the bin, the target bin we need from this vertical shaft from one of those four sides. So our robot has the ability to move in three dimensions and it has the ability to pick bins from four directions. So when we drag the bin onto the robot and it sits on the top of the robot, once we have it, we then descend down to the bottom of the shaft. And we have a meter of clearance underneath all of this storage volume at the bottom of the shaft. And for your listeners familiar with automation, they've seen grid sorters. So in essence, what we've combined is the highest storage density in the industry because of the geometry with two grid sorters, one on the top, one on the bottom. So once this payload comes out the bottom of this, we can now route this robot not on a linear path, but on a grid anywhere on the perimeter. And so if you think about e-com as a problem, we need three bins with the three different items that you've ordered. And ideally, we want to get to one place so we don't have to go through a sortation sequencing or a buffering or a consolidation event we can go from order into the system to a single post where we can do a pick, a pack, and a ship operation. And so our solution not only increases storage density and flexibility, there's no defined linear workflows. And what I mean by that is conveyors. You bolt a conveyor to the floor and it is point A to point B at a fixed velocity. And most fulfillment and distribution has always depended on sortation conveyor-based solutions, as does parcel post. We don't depend on sortation-based solutions. We do the sort as part of the pick. So we eliminate a number of touches, a lot of complexity, and create a lot of flexibility, because our workflow routing is now, like I said, not bolted to the floor, but it's a software assignment. So once we've presented the required bins to fulfill on any kind of batch ordering process or any single ordering process or kitting process or inventory or consolidation process or induction process, it doesn't matter. We just present bins and we can present them in a very precise way and in a very precise order. The robot then takes that bin that's now been completed and we don't need it anymore, and it climbs from the bottom of the solution back up to the top. And that's the only place that the robot actually encounters system power. Other than that, it's entirely self-powered. And we charge up a bank of ultra capacitors, and when it gets to the top of the solution, it's ready for its next task, where we will send it over to go get its next bin and put the one it's got away. And that cyclical nature of the solution, as well as the fact that we're routing in three dimensions now, two planes and the vertical column and then the pick stations on the perimeter, give us a great deal of opportunity for throughput density in a very small footprint, because we don't end up with the routing constraints typically encountered in two-dimensional routing solutions. I know that was a mouthful, and without pictures it's a little kind of hard to understand, but if you start with the idea that the shift was geometry, and then we interact with this dense storage matrix, it opens up your mind to thought. And the reason I say this is early on, we made a bunch of claims of what we could do. And everybody we reached out to in the industry basically told us bullshit. And then I described for them what I just described for you. And they're like, oh, yeah. Because if you think about it, if it's a two-dimensional system or row and aisle-based system, what we do is impossible with the density. You know, we have the highest storage density of any solution ever made, and with that has direct and unique access to every storage position. We don't have to move anything to get to anything else. And then combining the sequencing, sortation, buffering is unique in our solution, and we do that all in the same footprint. So we actually take the functionality of a fulfillment center, and we can put it into about 12-15% of a traditional fulfillment center square footage.
Well, that's very cool and very exciting. And like you say, you've got routing in three dimensions. Mm-hmm. So do you find yourself kind of having to explain, like do a lot of education with your clients? Or do you think once they see that 3D animation, they get it?
They understand the opportunity of the technology. Most of our work is on explaining to people how it could integrate into their workflows. Because when you take away traditional workflows, and what I mean is you've got picking, right? Then you've got a material handling movement that goes to sortation, and from sortation it goes to collation, and from collation it goes to pack out it goes to shipping sort. That's a typical kind of workflow. You just dropping us into that workflow, yes, has benefit in each item picking and certainly in space utilization, but that's not the way we were built. We were built to be a pick, pack, and ship discrete picking solution for e-com, and not just a higher, denser shuttle. So most of our work is in understanding that a new technology derives a new operation to solve a new problem. And trying to pull away from kind of the traditional, this is the way we've always done it, kind of thinking, and then managing risk for them. We are a new company, and And we are doing something unique and different with technology that's never been developed before. So showing them how the technology works, showing them that it works, showing them what our roadmap is moving forward. So a good understanding of where we came from, good understanding of where we are, and a good understanding of where we're going is the bulk of our conversations.
And so what's on your customer's mind? Is it everything? Like I was going to ask you a question about, are they maximizing space or accuracy, speed, safety, security? But I kind of imagine it's everything.
It is everything. The world's changed. The world's changed so dramatically that there's so many things that need to be considered. So let's break this down to kind of, the basic problem set. And the basic problem set is we as consumers used to provide the picking labor and the transportation labor for our purchases. We used to go to the mall. We used to go to the store. We used to pick it off the shelf. Yep. We'd go to the cashier. We'd pay for it. We'd get it in a bag. And then we would drive it home and deliver it to ourselves. That's not e-com. Now you got to figure out how to go pick a single item off a shelf and get it in a package and get it to the consumer and do that while trying to figure out how you're compensating for all the free labor and transportation that used to be, in the system.
Right.
And it is a big problem. And if you think about the cost of e-commerce fulfillment, it's 70% transportation. And then on top of that is there's additional costs in packaging, because it's not just in a bag anymore. It's in a cardboard box, mostly full of air, and tape and labels and all this stuff that you never did before.
Yep.
And now also you have to set up a facility that doesn't send a box of t-shirts to the back room of a retail store. It sends a single t-shirt of a very specific size in a box with maybe a can of shoe polish and, a Lego set for your kid. It's like the variability is unfathomable, actually, with the amount of selection that's available now. So the algorithms that used to support the optimization of automation technology that was doing mixed caseload pick for retail distribution and doing it once a week, the cadence is the other thing that shifted is we don't accept, that we'll get our stuff in 2 weeks by mail anymore. We don't accept that we'll get it in a week anymore. Like, we want it today or tomorrow. And so all of these problems really can't be supported by traditional supply chain infrastructure, because you can't put, a can of shoe polish in a cardboard box 10 times too big for it and put it on an airplane so I get it tomorrow, because a can of shoe polish is only $4. And you're going to spend $19 shipping it. Like, the unit economics are completely, completely impossible. So not to mention, environmentally, Absolutely. flying a can of shoe polish in a huge cardboard box, this is all unsustainable. And I'll say the reason that we're even in this problem is that we as consumers are not bearing the cost of e-commerce. I will say, for the most part, subscribers to AWS are bearing the cost of e-commerce fulfillment.
Sure.
Because Amazon, and I have a great deal of respect for them, they are not a villain in this in any way, stretch of the imagination. What that company done is absolutely amazing. To be a supply chain company that now is driving retail, and certainly in North America and in large parts of the world, as well as a technology company and a distributor of entertainment, there's a great opportunity there to take, areas that are generating large amounts of cash and move them to areas that are trying to build large amounts of market share. And not every retailer has that.
Right.
So, depends on the scale of your retailer and the volume, but it could cost them, like I said, up to $19 to fulfill an e-commerce order.
That's just crazy math.
It is. And it's not supportable. And we could dive into the grocery industry as well, and because that problem is even bigger. So we didn't just build robots, and I want to kind of make that clear. Yes, our solution was inspired by the way ants build colonies, but our solution was inspired on a broader sense by successful natural systems, and we can use ants as a great example. The biomass of ants on this planet exceeds the biomass of human beings. So to break that down, if you put all of the human beings on the planet, what are we, 7.5 billion, and put us on one side of a scale, and you put all the ants on the planet on the other side of the scale, ants would outweigh us.
Wow.
But we don't know they're here, because they just distribute themselves through an ecosystem, not to overwhelm it. Whereas human beings, we come in and we centralize. That's just what we do. And fulfillment was always operated under the same model, which was let's centralize fulfillment and in the spoken hub model. Problem with spoken hub, it works great if you're filling trucks full of cases and delivering them once a week to a store. That's a very efficient model. Not so great if you got to get a t-shirt or a can of shoe polish to someone tomorrow. So start thinking about the ecosystem required. It isn't just a technology solution, it's a network solution. It's about pre-deploying inventory. Now, most retailers can't fathom, support, have the volume or the capex or the real estate footprint to put a micro fulfillment center or a small fulfillment center in every major market within 2 hours of their consumer. It's not feasible. It's not possible. Now there's a few companies that can, absolutely, and we all know who they are, and they have massive real estate footprint. They have massive volume. They have exceptional people. And they can develop network supply chain solutions to support their business and their customers and are doing so. But then that leaves everybody else. And so when we started thinking about the problem, yes, we wanted to provide a solution, the best solution for distributed network supply chain. I believe we are leading the world in developing network supply chain solutions. And it's not just a software solution. We got to move atoms at the end of the day.
Yep.
But looking at the problem holistically, we didn't want to be just better in the warehouse. We wanted to address the operational costs, of course. We wanted to address the complexity of automation required for e-commerce and make that as simple and as flexible as possible. We wanted to be able to put this solution where the people are. One of the biggest advantages for us of being 12 to 15% of the square footage isn't about just saving rent in a warehouse. It's about putting a warehouse right in the city.
Right downtown.
And or right in that area just outside of downtown, and every city has it, that the buildings are being converted to restaurants and condos because they were warehouses back in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and 70s. But that now has like an obsolete kind of real estate asset when it comes to supply chain because of, it's not 1.5 million square feet,
Yep.
And that's, but you got to build that 1.5 million square feet an hour and a half out of town now.
Right.
So we started looking at this, and it addresses a number of problems. And I think, we're very fortunate. And when I say fortunate, we're damn lucky. Okay. Let's look at one of the biggest problems right now, and this is kind of unfathomable to most people in the U.S. because that's where most of the data is coming out of, high unemployment rate due to COVID. But 10 years of accelerated consumer adoption for e-commerce. What they were expecting 10 years from now is what's happening now after a year of COVID. But they can't find enough people to work in the warehouse.
Absolutely.
So how do you address all of these compounding problems? Our solution is a distributed supply chain network that's in market. So it'll lower transportation costs. It'll increase the service level to the consumer. It takes up a fraction of the square footage, but it's on a bus route. It's close to population densities, which means we can deliver to our customers, but we can also actually open up labor possibilities that aren't available to those places that are an hour and a half out of town. We've also made the interaction, because we're always going to need people. We're not totally replacing people, but we've made the jobs the most human they can be, in the fact that we're asking people actually now to, you know, pick a variety of different items and get them into a container in a variety of different configurations. And that is a problem that machines are not good at doing. And you can always put a box that's way too big to make it easy to pack it, but that's not efficient either. So I believe we've addressed, you know, the options for open tool labor market. I will also say that we're developing our solution so you don't need to either need to be able to speak or read English. You don't need to be able to speak or read, period, to interface with our technology and be productive as an associate.
Are you all icon driven? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Image driven and using, you know, it's not available today, but using point cloud vision systems for validation. And the point of this is, if you can walk into an Amazon Go store, pick something off the shelf, it can bill your account and have you walk out. We can make sure the right thing comes out of a bin and goes into the with the other right stuff. It's that technology exists. It's not our technology. We're just implementing it in our solution. So we're trying to make this solution solve all the problems, as many as we can. But the biggest problem that needs to be solved, and this is where, as a CTO, I get very, very excited, is how do you coordinate this? If you're in one building, you can coordinate it all very easily. If you're in, what does Amazon have, 200 fulfillment centers now? How do you coordinate best practices and the highest efficiency across hundreds of sites?
Yes.
So the next step for us is, and we're deep into this, we right now have Canada's first private LTE installation. Because not only bandwidth, but the security of information is super important when you want to create a trusted, timely, and transparent supply chain. So the acquiring of information, the transmission of information, the management of that information, consolidation of that information, and then the inferences from all of that information used to maximize the efficiency of a supply chain, but also with all of that data, now we can start leveraging predictive analytics that can help us decide how many pairs of size 9 black suede Adidas Gazelles need to be in Calgary.
Right.
Because we don't need 100 pairs. We probably need 2 or 3 to be able to meet the customer expectations of same day, next day delivery. And then once we've fulfilled that customer expectation, now we can optimize the network to backfill to make sure that there's going to be enough. And it's not about having everything in one place. It's about distributed inventory, and distributed at a service level model defined by our retailers. If they want same day service, we got to be closer. If they want next day service, we can get a little bit more, less granularly distributed. Just still meet the expectations of the consumer and do it at the lowest cost possible. Because now we're moving stuff in aggregate down to these nodes and not moving them singularly in the belly of a plane with a parcel post carrier. So, you know, yeah, we're cool robots that climb around in 3D, and I'd love to show you because they are damn cool. But they're a piece in a very broad puzzle to solve a very complex problem the simplest way we can. And that's the fun part for me right now.
It sounds like it's very exciting. I just need to go find more and check out even more on YouTube. So what are some of your big challenges now? And I kind of assume it's talent attraction for yourself.
Well, the first challenge we had to overcome was gravity. Gravity's a pretty unforgiving, it's a bitch. when you're building 3D robotics and just developing it, we had to solve that biggest challenge, and we have, which is nice. there was a pretty steep learning curve there. Talent, absolutely. But I'll also say one of our bigger challenges is getting people out of a traditional mode of thinking. And both, you know, with our internal teams, you know, we're all used to doing things a certain way. And when you do something that's this different, it gives us an opportunity to kind of look at everything again through a new lens. So internally, certainly that, and but also with the customer opportunities and partnership opportunities and stuff like that, is there's a world of possibilities here that we haven't even discovered. And anybody that has, I don't know what the word is, you know, the internal freedom to think very broadly, are the people we want to work with, both within our organization and within our partnerships with our customers. And that one's a challenge. You know, people, Calgary has a huge talent base here, but there's not enough software developers in the world to satisfy demand right now.
Sure.
You know, we now, like many, many companies, like almost all companies, you know, COVID's and remote work has opened the door of possibilities. And so now we're able to look at talent opportunities much broader than just local market. But in the same breath, every other company in the world can look at much broader talent opportunities beyond their local market as well. So now, as a technology company, we're not just competing with the other companies here in Calgary. We're competing with every other technology company in the world. So it's changed the paradigm, and adapting to that is something we want to, you know, we want to be excellent at, and we're just learning and trying to figure that out. The one thing I guess I can say is, from a talent point of view, is we have this opportunity to do some very unique, disruptive things. I always tell the team, we have a big opportunity to put a pretty significant dent in the world. And that's not an opportunity afforded by many, you know. And if you want to be part of the foundation of what's to come, and I believe there is significant opportunity to make meaningful change in the world with technology. That's what I think the best opportunity we have at Adabotics. You know, consumer behavior is not changing.
No, we're going to want stuff faster, if anything.
And I think we're going to want more choice. And I'm not saying selection. I'm not saying, you know, selection from a single retailer. I think one of, from my own experience, and, you know, I've talked to a few other people that really share this experience, but it might not be a global experience, but we're a brand, we're a tribal animal. We align ourselves with those things that we feel align with us. And I don't necessarily make my buying decisions off of how many stars are put on it. I make my buying decisions off whether or not I feel understood, and the stuff that's being presented to me is something that I'm attracted to. So curation of product and the understanding of consumer, I believe, are really, really important. And that's where I see retailers fitting in the future. Is retailers need to focus on the curation of their product and really deeply understanding their consumer, or at least the consumer that's attracted to their brand. Because I'm not making any judgment in this at all. But if you buy your menswear at an expensive, you know, store with custom tailored suits downtown, you might be a different customer than the guy that's really comfortable buying his menswear at the workwear store in the strip mall. Those are, and one's not better than the other. They're just, we got to admit that they're different. And the stores, these brands now need to understand deeply their consumer, and curate product for their consumer. So the decision-making process and introducing of new things is still managed. And then we want to help them making sure that the playing field's completely leveled, equalized now when it comes to, you know, fulfillment delivery. So you can actually start spending your dollars at the brands that align with your sensibilities, and not who's going to get it to you the quickest. Because that I think is a variable that needs to be leveled.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating.
And if we level that, then the consumer ends up with more choice and better choices. And so as a consumer, that's important to me. And the other thing I'd like is I'd like to be able to put my money, you know, spend my money where I'd like, you know, where I'd like to support, of course, those organizations and those brands that I feel I identify with. But I don't want 14 boxes at my door.
Right.
I would like to get my all my purchases collated and in the most efficient way possible, not only for my time, but also cost and the environmental impact. Walk down, like I live in a condo building, walk down to the garbage room and look at the amount of cardboard boxes with smiley faces on it down there. It's
staggering.
It's staggering. And that's not supportable. Parcel post should not be the foundation of retail commerce. It's not going to work long term.
I think you're all over sustainability because it sounds like it's the perfect solution to this ongoing worldwide problem.
Well, yeah, and China's not taking our garbage anymore, so we got to figure it out ourselves now. So
should I ask you the question of who is your best, like your bullseye customer?
Yeah, you're probably, it's not going to be the answer you think it is. Early on when we were raising money, venture capitalists, especially early stage venture capitalists, want a very, very narrow focus. And I think they wanted me to say that we are going to focus on online athletic footwear sales. And I frustratingly told them that anybody that needs to store anybody that can store stuff in our bins and needs to store it more efficiently than anybody else. So your audience is interesting for this because we have done a lot of work, but looking at and scoping projects for manufacturing. Our solution is ideal for taking a bin of single items and making a kit of differentiated single items. So that could be a grocery order. Certainly that could be an e-commerce order. That can also be the tape reels for an SMT pick and place machine. It could also be the screws and hardware needed to build a steering wheel. It could also be parts needed for the cockpit of an airplane. The idea of a storage conveyance, kitting, buffering, sequencing, delivery work great in e-commerce and work great in just-in-time manufacturing. So who's our customer? Who's our target? Right now, I can say our customer is the retail sector, grocery, and each item e-commerce fulfillment. But that isn't the limit of what we're doing. And I would say the customers we're also targeting are the customers that are already sharing an ecosystem for group efficiencies. And what I mean by that is if you're already in a shopping mall, because you don't own your own real estate assets across the country, and your throughput doesn't justify a couple hundred thousand square feet, it justifies a couple thousand square feet. I think we have an aggregate solution for you in a shared ecosystem. If you're a big box retailer and you have all those volumes and you have that real estate footprint, I believe we have the ultimate way to network that together and automate your back room. If you're a grocer and you're trying to figure out, because when I talked about the problems of e-com, the problems of grocery e-com are magnified. When you think about the labor to pick a grocery order before and the delivery of that grocery order, and the size of that grocery order, it pales in the problem, the problem of e-com pales to the problem of grocery e-com. So grocers, and it comes down to that first thing is if your stuff fits in the bin and you need to store stuff and create orders more efficiently than anybody else, then we want to talk to you. So, recently we announced a partnership with FoodX out of Vancouver. FoodX has an amazing software platform for grocery e-com. And we have the ideal automation system for grocery e-com. So it's nice to work with another Canadian company to deliver a solution to the market as quickly as we can. We have installations, in wholesale food service with Gordon Food Service and Nordstrom in both retail distribution and e-com fulfillment. And there's a number of other customers that I get in trouble with the lawyers if I tell you about right now. But we're working with, you know, some of the biggest kids, and excited that there is at least, you know, an alignment on a shared vision of what the future could be and should be. And excited to actually start delivering solutions, like real solutions, and not incremental solutions. Real solutions to a market that desperately needs it.
Scott, thanks for coming onto the podcast. How do people get a hold of you and find out more about Adabotics?
Adabotics.com. That's the best way. It's I will apologize. We're working on it. We've been building robots, not websites. there's information there. There's lots of stuff that's been published. A Google search of Adabotics will bring up a nice kind of cornucopia of information and perspective. Of course, you can reach out to us on LinkedIn or directly through info@adabotics.com.
That's wonderful. Thank you again. Our sponsor for this episode is Earhart Automation Systems. Earhart builds and commissions turnkey solutions for their worldwide clients. With over 80 years of precision manufacturing, they understand the complex world of robotics, automated manufacturing, and project management, delivering world-class custom automation on time and on budget. Contact one of their sales engineers to see what Earhart can build for you. I would also like to thank our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. These four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, end users, research groups, and consulting firms throughout the world that are driving automation forward. I'd also like to recognize our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. And they're at paintedrobot.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us at The Robot Industry Podcast, you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Attraction Industry Marketing, and I'd like to thank my nephew Chris Gray for the music, Chris Colvin for audio support, my partner Janet, and our partners A3 and Painted Robot, and our sponsor, Earhart Automation Systems.